What's up, guys? Thank you so much for joining me for this super special of episodes. Now you might be wondering, Amanda, what makes this episode so special? And to that I say, had you been following us on social media, you would have seen what makes this episode so special. And you'd be saving yourself all kinds of time right now with your internal monologue, asking yourself mundane, innate questions that you already have answers to. You could free up so much time. I mean, think about the possibilities. Like, you could be thinking what you're making for dinner later. You could be investing your thoughts into a new hobby. There's just so many potential opportunities, and you're missing them all by asking questions that you could just answer if you followed us on Instagram or social media or TikTok. I guess those are social medias. Anyway, follow us. We're on Instagram, One Nothing Podcast, where you can find the answers to all of your questions, like what makes this episode special. Now that we're a full minute into it and I've lectured you on following us, we're going to get into what makes this episode so special. This is episode one of our mini-series called One Something Podcast. And don't worry or stress or fret, because you're going to be able to find these in the same place that you find our regular episodes. These are just going to be aired about every 10 episodes or so to start, and they're going to feature first-person accounts of stories of survival. And when I say first-person, I don't mean from me. I don't mean I'm researching this stuff and telling it to you. These are unique opportunities in which we get to sit down with the survivor themselves, and they tell us what happened in their own words, which is incredible. So I'm going to launch into that. I do want to pause real quick and just talk about how far we've come in these short 10 episodes, because it does not seem like 10 episodes. That is hours of my life. And I'm happy about that. I'm not mad about it. But it's just insane to me that we've hit this landmark so quickly. Despite doing every 2-week episodes, time really does fly. And I remember back in like January of this year, 23, and I'm just like, I was listening to all these podcasts, and I really wasn't like, you know when like you're thirsty and you're dying for a sip of water, but you take a sip of pop, like it helps a little, but then you just really want water worse, you know? And that's kind of what I was doing. Like, I was listening to podcasts trying to get like this craving of these stories that I wanted to hear about. And I would find a couple and I'd be like, oh my gosh, it's so good. I want to hear more. And so I listened to more episodes, and the other episodes were like nothing the same. And I'm like, well, wait, that one was so thorough and like detailed and had so many points of research, and this one has none of that. And so it was really frustrating trying to fill that niche that I wanted to fill. And so that's what kind of started the thought process of, well, maybe I should start a podcast, and then I can talk about whatever I want and make episodes about whatever I want. And people can either find me and be like, oh, I like that too, or not, and it'll just be me talking. But either way, I'm learning about new cases. So I was like, win-win. I hadn't really done any kind of like commitment to it though until February. And I was talking to Rachel, who, if this is your first episode joining us, go listen to other episodes. Rachel sits in on a few of them with us. She's hysterical. She is one of the biggest blessings to my life since moving down to Florida, because she's a really outstanding person. And if you knew who Rachel was, you'd know that the second that I told her that I was thinking about doing a podcast, nothing but support right out the gate. She's like, do it and let me be on it. And then One Nothing was born. Here we are. It's been 10 amazing episodes. It's been 5 amazing, very quickly moving months. We've had 9 victims to freak accidents, murders, and animal attacks. And now we can officially strike this off of our checklist. We have a first-person account of the most grueling animal attack that I've ever heard somebody walk away out of, or climb away, crawl. You'll hear how we got out. But the point is, it's an honor to be able to bring this episode to you guys. Now, we're not going to do our typical outro, so I'm just going to ramble real quick with a couple updates. We're not going to do our segments. We're not going to do our joke of the day. We're not going to do our question of the week. We'll kick those up again on episode 11, but I just want to get a few things out before we start, because once the episode starts, I'm just going to give our survivor the floor, and it's all uphill from there, believe me. I do want to say that after sitting down with this amazing person and hearing their story, I took home some lessons that I've applied to my life because of it, and it makes my life better. And I hope that you guys do the same. This person is an extraordinary human. They really do a world of good for people, especially survivors, which is, you know, like a huge part of our thing. So I really want you guys to give him the respect and adoration and admiration that he deserves. And I really, really think that if you can take anything home from this episode and apply it to your life in any meaningful or impactful way, should you feel like sharing that with me later, like, hey, this is how this episode helped my life, please do share it with me. I would love to share it with him so he just knows how big his reach is and how important what he is saying is. This was not an easy thing for him to talk about. Despite how stoic he seems and how amazing of a feat of resilience this is, it's nothing that any person could ever be completely okay with. So, of course, this is a difficult thing, I'm sure, for this person to speak about. And because of that, I want all of the positive vibes, all of the love and respect in the world. Without further ado, I'm going to introduce that our victim, our survivor. See, I'm in the old habits die hard. Our survivor of this fantastic, wonderful episode 10, our very first one-something episode, none other than Jeremy Evans. If you haven't heard of Jeremy, you either live under a rock, or the alternative is you just don't spend time around bears. Both are acceptable answers, if I'm being honest. Jeremy is a Canadian hunter who wound up in the mouth of a grizzly bear several times over. The sheer just mountain of odds that was stacked against this man, and he overcame every single one of them, is something that is truly phenomenal, and it's what drew me immediately to this person's story. I just happened to be scrolling on Instagram doing the dishes, and I came upon a video of him retelling part of his story, and the second that I heard him speak, I was like, I have to speak to this guy. I have to hear his story. And I have to share it with my listeners, because it's not that I have a lot of you guys, but you're so meaningful to me and you're so important. And anything that I can gain from in any way, like, I learned some really extremely valuable life lessons, and I didn't have to undergo the situation that Jeremy went through. So if you can apply that to your life in any meaningful way, that's all I really want. Because I love you guys, and I want you guys to be great, and Jeremy's great, and he spreads his greatness. I also want to let you know Jeremy has a cause very near and dear to his heart, and he has a very important mission, and I really want to help him with that. So I really need you guys to rally with me and help support this cause. Listen in towards the end, because Jeremy is going to talk about it. He does have a website, grizzlydude.ca. That's not a Canadian joke. I can make that joke because I'm Canadian. Get it? C-A? Anyway. grizzlydude.ca. I myself picked up a copy of his book, Mauled, Lessons Learned from a Grizzly Bear Attack. It is the story of the exact account that we're about to hear about, but just a little bit more detail and more information about, like, his hospital journey and his journey back to through rehabilitation and all of the aftermath. So pick yourself up a copy. It is amazing. Proceeds from the book go towards the cause, as well as any of the merchandise on his site. So go check it out. He also autographs all of his books. Mine says, "You can bear it," which is just tells you the kind of guy this guy is. He's amazing. Really excited for you guys. I'm going to just let you know really quick, because like I said, we're not going to do an outro for this. We're just saying everything now. We do have episode 11 coming up in 2 weeks. That one is also crazy cool. We have partnered up with the amazing women of the Suspended Sentence podcast, which I know I talk about them on here quite a bit, but they're truly phenomenal. I really want you to go check them out. We're teaming up on an amazing, amazing, amazing story, and I really want you guys there for it, so listen in. We'll be posting more stuff about that in the, coming out here soon, but yeah, we're going to get into this first-person account of what should have been a fatal grizzly bear mauling in the backcountry of Canada by none other than our friend Jeremy Evans. All right, guys, here we go.
There we go. Let's try that.
There we go.
There. That's working now.
Yay. So I wanted to formally say from Canadian to Canadian, because I was born and raised in Canada. I live in the States now, but just, I don't know, cool. I like meeting other Canadians. I'm weird.
What state do you live in?
I live in Florida now, but I was born and raised in Hamilton, Ontario. So not too far, but...
Nope, a little ways away.
A little bit, just a little. So again, thank you so much for just taking some time to talk with me. I'm really excited. I stumbled on your story and I was like, I'm just like captivated about everything I learned about you. And not to like fangirl over you, because I'm sure you get it a lot, but just like talk about a life lesson that like just sticks with you and like, to, I don't know, crazy, crazy story. I'll let you tell it for sure. But if you could just start me off, if you're comfortable telling me a little bit about like, you know, how I know you're big into nature and that's like a big passion for you. So like, how did that start? Do you have any kind of thing that happened that kind of provoked that?
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
I'm
trying.
Already?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
We all artists, man. You feel me? We going to have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit.
Don't
right
play
now.
With this shit.
I gotta lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit seriously.
Well, I grew up in Calgary here. My family was an outdoor family. We did a lot of traveling, camping, hiking. So I just kind of stuck with it. I love running around in the bush like a wild man.
For sure. That's really cool. So just kind of like always been doing it and just ingrained in your heart kind of deal?
Yeah. Like I don't smoke or drink. And so when I was younger, I'd save all that money and use it for gas to go out in the country to, you know, climb or go hiking or take pictures of the scenery and wildlife and just kind of stuck with it, I guess.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you did because you're obviously very good at it. I know you're big into hunting and that you had a couple things in mind you were looking for, particularly like bighorn sheep at what point?
Yeah, well, I'm still in the process of trying to harvest one. It's been 17 years and one bear mauling, so.
No kidding.
I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah, no, you'll get it. You'll get it. Get high again, yeah.
Yeah, so, you can't let one little hiccup there stop you from doing what you love to do, right?
Yeah, well, it didn't stop you for sure, and that's what's most impressive, I think, is that, you know, you did almost immediately, like, breeze right on past, and that takes a kind of resilience you don't come across every day, which is why I was so like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. So if you don't mind, if you want to just like kind of walk me through, start at whatever point you're comfortable with and just kind of, you have the floor is yours.
Well, on August 24th, 2017, I kind of started off like every normal sheep hunt. I get up at 11 o'clock at night, drive a couple hours out to the spot. Usually I get out there to where I park my truck around 2:30 in the morning and I load up my bicycle in the moonlight and hop on it and ride on in. My goal is to make it usually about 18 kilometers back into where I set up a base camp, which is basically like a picnic table I carried back in there and a little flat spot for my camp and a little, there's a creek nearby where I get my water. So kind of like a little, I don't know, a little safe haven, I guess, one of those little places. And then
I'm very idyllic.
Yeah, and, you know, in that area there, spent 17 years in there, always the first 2 weeks of the hunting season, and then near the end of the 2 weeks of the hunting season, just try to make a nice little place there, and usually pretty quiet, you don't see anybody, and I usually leave in the middle of the night, because that way there I can get in the way in the back for daylight, and you got all day to set up your camp, and you don't do it in the middle of the night, and and just kind of hang out and walk around, look for some sheep.
It sounds so like the first part. I mean, it sounds nice.
So, I mean, start off like normal, loading up my truck and, or loading up my backpack for my truck, throwing it on and moonlight. And, I managed to make it into the back, off the main trail. There's a couple of drainages you got to cross through and I made it through those drainages and I was, a little bit slower normal, just taking my time in there. I already knew where the sheep were. I just wanted to make sure I got in there and watch them feed off and go bed down, and then I could set up my camp and watch my ram all day and hopefully the next morning harvest them. So I got into the second last drainage there and went through that, come over top of the hill there, and I spotted some sheep. I got pretty excited. So I was slowly making my way along the bush or edge of the tree line. And then I noticed some rams and got really excited and took my backpack off and leaned against my bicycle and was watching the sheep. I stood up to reposition to stretch out. And when I did, I noticed a little brown thing run in front of me, less than 10 feet away. You know, I knew right away what it was. Mm-hmm. And I got this overwhelming feeling of being totally screwed because it was a grizzly bear cub. And I didn't see mama, and I knew she had to be close by. So from there, things kind of happened really fast. I was reaching in my backpack, grabbed my bear spray, and at the whole time thinking, where was mama? I mean, situation was kind of like being in a car wreck and you're flipping in a car. And you know you're going to hit the ground at some point, just when.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Everything's happening in slow motion. So I was reaching for the bear spray. I heard a branch break over my right shoulder, and I turned and looked, and there was mama less than arm's reach away on a full charge.
Oh, my gosh.
Her right paw, I remember, was stretched out forward, like reaching out for me. Her mouth was slightly open. You could see her teeth. You can see the whites of her eyes. She was on a full charge, and I didn't really have much time to react. I literally just stepped aside and took my bicycle and dropped it in front of her. Her head went through the frame of the bike, and then she stopped, picked it up, and turned and looked at me. It's kind of like a necklace on her. And
oh, God. I'm sorry. That shouldn't be funny, but it's a
video. It's okay. I can bear it.
I see what you did there.
So when she turned and looked at me, I just took my backpack and smashed her in the face, and she shook her head, and the bike came off. And as I was pushing her back with the backpack, she managed to grab my right hand and crush against the frame of the backpack. And just remember feeling, you know, like the sharp pain in my hand, and just seeing her mouth kind of wrapped around it, and you could feel the teeth kind of grinding against the backpack and like separating the bones in your hand.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then I managed to, she let go. And then I just started really going hard, beating her on the head with the backpack, smashed her in the face. And she got the hint. She started to back away. So I started to back up, and we got about 30 feet or so apart. And I was looking in my backpack, reaching down, trying to unzip it and pull my bear spray out or take my gun off. I was just fumbling, and then I remember I just looked up to see where she was. She had spun around, and she came charging in a second time. And this is what I call the beginning of round two. So she came charging in, and I really didn't know what to do. I just chucked my backpack at her and figured, heck, I'm just going to try running up the hill and see if I can jump off the steep side of the hill into a tree to gain some elevation pretty quick, and hopefully, you know, get out of her sight, and hopefully she won't be able to grab me. Well, I remember running up the hillside, and I found a tree and grabbed it, jumped into it, scrambled up best I could, and I remember I can hear running behind me, just huffing and like, and you just the sound of her bounding through the bush. I got about 5.5-6 feet up in the tree. And I remember looking down, and my right leg was hanging down, and I was trying to pull it up, and there she was at the base of the tree. She stood on her hind legs, wrapped her paws around my right leg, and she almost just like guided it into her mouth. When she was pulling it down, she kind of lunged up, grabbed her mouth. She grabbed me right around the behind the knee. And teeth just sunk right in.
Near knee? Oh, my God.
Yeah, kind of just bit right from the back of my knee all the way to the front, and her front teeth are kind of around the front part of my knee. Ooh. And I remember just looking down and watching, you know, her mouth close around my knee and thinking, this is going to hurt. And to my surprise, I didn't feel anything at the time. You could just hear everything just crunch. Because I was thinking, like, this is going to hurt. She shook her head, pulled me right out of the tree. No matter what I could do, I couldn't hold on. I hit the ground pretty hard. The tree I climbed was a spruce tree. And I crawled underneath it and wrapped my arms and legs around the trunk of the tree. And hopefully the lower spruce boughs of the tree would be able to protect me from her, you know, getting at me. And she was digging away, clawing at me. And it seemed to be pretty successful at first. She almost seemed like she got frustrated and then just reached in with her mouth. And I was laying on my right side, wrapped around the tree. She grabbed me right in the on the left side, kind of in the lower stomach, like glove handle area, and just clamped down, picked me up, shook her head, and tossed me.
So she, you know, she picked your whole like up off the ground with her mouth?
Right off the ground. And then she shook her head real, did a little quick head shake, and that probably knocked me, you know, 5-6 feet away. When I hit the ground there, it knocked the wind out of me, and I was trying to curl up into a ball and trying to take a breath, but before I could, she was right on top of me, just instantaneously, like before you can get a breath in. I was laying on my right side again and curled up in a kind of trying to curl up in a ball. She came down and bite me in the face, and her first bite caught me on either side of the left eye, with her canine entering in the corner of my nose, kind of right where your tear duct is, or your eye meets the nose. And the other canine tooth caught me on the other side of the eye, and she crunched down, removing all the left side of my face, everything below my left eye.
Jeez.
And, you know, and she's took that one bite, and I just was thinking, fuck this plane dead. Like, this sucks getting chewed on.
Yeah. Yeah, they tell that's what you're supposed to be, I think, right? But yeah, it seems like practicing it is a little harder than seeing it.
It's very hard to play dead when something's chewing on your face. I gotta say,
I can imagine, yeah.
So then I rolled over and I was like, screw this. I started punching her in the nose and poking her eye, trying to grab her ear, and then she was snapping at my hand, and I was able to pull it away quite fast. And you know, I just put my thumb on the edge of the corner of her nose and started peeling back the nose and trying to poke her in the eye. Then she come down to bite me in the face a second time, and I'm laying on my back, and she's kind of almost straddling me from the right side. Her back end was on my right side, her front end kind of facing more to the left. She's standing over me, and she come down to bite me again in the face. And just the way her mouth was coming down and the way my left hand was, it was kind of a perfect moment, like a sweet moment. She left herself wide open, and I punched my left hand into her mouth. And I just remember you could feel the tongue, all the little bumps and ridges on her tongue, all the little scars. You just, at first it was kind of like dry, then it turned to like a wet, soft leather. And then you'd feel the ridges as I stuck my fingers down her throat. I stuck my middle finger and index finger down her throat, and the rest of my hand just wrapped around her tongue. I mean, I had this thought that if I grabbed her tongue, she wouldn't be able to bite me anymore. It kind of worked at first. I laying there on the ground, and I remember
beginning your wrist.
Well, I could see her mouth was partway down my forearm, and I just remember looking at it like, wow, like my hand's way in there, and. She had stepped forward and her back legs were digging into my right side, and the claws were catching into my abdomen there. And that was pretty painful. So I'm trying to push her off of me, pushing on her hind end, her legs, and just kept trying to push, trying to get her off while my hands in her mouth. And, she was choking and making some horrendous sounds. Then my hand kind of slipped off when I hit the belly, and you could tell it was the belly because it was, you know, less hair, a little more squishy.
Yeah.
And I reached up in between the legs and grabbed what I thought was balls. There was a big chunk of loose skin that, you know, just, that's what right it felt it. Like. Yeah. And I just, I grabbed it, twisted, and gave her a yank. Originally I thought it was balls, but turns out it wasn't. But whatever I had, I was trying to rip off. And as soon as I grabbed and twisted, and when I pulled, she started to squeal like a pig, like just also like a stunned She kind of like hunched up, and you feel, you know, her whole body kind of get tight, and she was choking.
Got her where it hurt.
Yeah, and she started to. She was choking, and she was squealing like a pig, like a real deep, deep squeal of a pig, kind of like a pig going through puberty, like just a real deep, deep squeal. And then I figured she got the hint, and I let go. And she ran back the way she came, kind of up the hill and back the way she came, squealing like a pig and just defecating across the mountainside. Like you could hear it as she's and smell it as she's running away.
She was shitting as she was running?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. What kind of display of behavior was that fall under?
When they get scared or nervous, they defecate like that.
They just go, wow.
So everything just lets go, right? Just like a human when you get that scared, right?
I guess that makes sense, yeah.
And so I got up right away, dusted myself off, and I was like, well, that freaking sucked. Walked over to my backpack and got to my backpack and was leaning against this old rotten log in the ground and pulled up my phone and turned it on to selfie mode, and I took a picture of my face.
And I think such an incredible thing to do.
Yeah, you know, I look not bad there, eh?
Well, luckily I didn't see the real one. I saw blurred visions, but I can my mind can populate the rest.
So I'm, you know, sitting there looking at this picture and I'm thinking, well, I ain't too bad. I mean, I can go over there and shoot that sheep, or I can go and look for this bear. And I'm just kind of sitting there like kind of mad, you know. I was pretty excited to go sheep hunting, and this was basically the first, you know, 5 hours in my hunt, this happened. So now I got to pack up and go home, and pretty unhappy. So I'm sitting there leaning against this old rotten log in my backpack there, and I pulled my gun off, and I was just leaning against their stump. I had the gun against my left shoulder and the clip in my right hand, and I was putting shells in, just kind of cursing myself and just, you know, like, what do I do? And as I'm doing that, I remember looking down, putting the shell on the third round in the clip, and my hands dropped to my side, and everything went numb, and I could feel like something breaking in my head, like just all that pressure in here to crack, and it sounded like ice breaking. When you take an ice tray and you crack it.
Yeah.
She had come back and grabbed me by the back of the skull, and that sound was my just her crushing my skull. Or, and I remember seeing her paws come on the either side of me in the ground, and she just like heaved and just was pulling me back into the bushes. You know, I don't know how far she pulled me. It seemed like it was quite a ways, but like I said, I don't know. It felt like forever. When we came to a stop, I was kind of sitting on my butt, hunched over, and she reached over with one of her claws, caught me on the left corner of the face, kind of the chin, corner of the mouth with her paw, and she peeled it all the way across my face, across my nose, across my right eye, and just peeled all the skin off my face, all the way to the right side of my head, above my ear, and just tore a huge chunk of my scalp off. And then she was chewing on the back of my head, just gnawing on it like a dog gnawing on a bone. You know how they like turn their head sideways and just crunching away. She was gnawing on my head and in her claws, she was just ripping and tearing everything, chewing on my neck, kind of in the collarbone area, throat. And, you know, this went on for probably, I don't know, 15 to 30 seconds or so. She must have moved, or I fell back. I remember when I fell back, I couldn't see. I remember feeling my face, and my left eye was hanging out of the socket with the bone kind of all smashed around it, kind of hanging down. My right eye, I mean, I was looking for it, feeling it, and it wasn't there. There was nothing there. I could just feel something above me. Like I knew there's something standing above me. You could just feel the hair in the body. And so I reached up with both hands, and much to my surprise, there was a big set of balls laying there, at least what I thought it was.
Oh,
I grabbed with both hands and pulled as hard as I could and pulled myself up. She started to gasp and squeal like a pig. And managed to wrap my legs around her head and neck, kind of like a UFC fighter, and I just locked him in and held on. Whatever I had, I was trying to rip off. She was squealing, fucking like a bronco, and then she started to like roll around the mountainside, and I could just feel the bushes and the grass and stuff, you know, scratch against my back as she's running across the hillside. I let go, and she ran down the hillside just squealing and just defecating over everything. And I knew at that moment when she left, I tried to stand up, but I couldn't. I couldn't see anything. Like I said, my left eye was hanging out of the socket. The right eye was, well, was smashed in my skull. Actually, I thought it was gone. And I remember, just trying to look. In order to look forward, I either have to tilt my head back or hold my eye up in my hand. And I crawled down the hillside, and I knew relatively where I was or where the trail was. So I crawled down, found the trail, and I crawled down the trail and managed to find my my gear all spread across the hillside. And I found my gun right away, and I grabbed some shells in my pocket, and I tried to put them in the gun, but I couldn't put them in the chamber. I couldn't see, first of all. And every time I put a shell in it, just followed where the clip goes. And I just couldn't see enough to stick the shell in the tube. And, my fingers were all going different ways too, so nothing was quite working. Yeah. I started to panic. And then I was feeling around looking for my clip because that's what I needed. And while I was doing that, I found my mustache and goatee. And then I found a chunk of my scalp and a piece of flesh like my ear. And, I was feeling around looking, found that. And then I found the clip. And then I slammed the gun, the first dark thing by me, got 3 rounds. And, then I'm sitting there on my pack and kind of thinking like, what do you do? I got all these chunks of flesh in my hands. I can't see, blood's pouring out of everywhere. I knew that was it. Like that was the end. I mean, who's going to survive that?
Right. I mean, obviously you, but I mean, in the other circumstance, I would not bet, my gosh.
Well, I didn't think I was ever going to make it. I was sitting there, I got all the pieces of my face, my hand. I'm over 12 kilometers from the truck. I got one ridge to climb over, and I got to cross the creek a bunch of times, and then I got to drive somewhere for help. So, I mean, I didn't think about making it that far. I mean, the only thought I had in my mind was just make it somewhere to find the body. Well, even before that, though, I'm sitting there, I got my face and all that laying there, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to die, so I might as well end it on my terms. And so I loaded up the gun and stuck the gun against the ground, put the barrel underneath my chin, and was thinking it's probably the best way to go out. At least I can control it instead of laying there waiting for it to happen. I pulled the trigger, and the gun just clicked. I was kind of stunned for a second, like, what happened? Like, what's going on? And then I reached in between my legs there to re-bolt another shell in there, and I just cocked the hammer and pushed it back down. And when I did, the gun went off, and I just sent a bullet just inches on the side of my face, and, I was just thinking, holy fuck, like, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
I was like, that was kind of stupid, and...
That changed you immediately. You were like...
going to
fight.
Yeah. Well, that just, just like, wow, I can't give up. Like I need to, I kind of was sitting there thinking like, I just can't give up. I owed it to my, my wife and daughter to at least try to make it somewhere where they're going to find me, because where I was, ain't nobody going to find me there. Like it's just maybe half a dozen people go there in a year. Maybe.
It's very remote.
Extremely remote, and even the outfitters that hunt in that area don't go back in there that often, so they'd be about the only ones. And when they do, it's usually around this time of the year or slightly later in the year. So, I figured in that moment I at least need to try to make it somewhere where they're going to find me, at least make it across the drainage to the other side. On the other side of the drainage, there was a trail there where it splits and you can go up the mountain or go back to where I was, and more people go to there than to where I was. So So I figured at least I'd, you know, wrap myself up and try to make it across to there and document as much as this is possible so that my wife know that I didn't just give up. I actually tried to, I tried to make it out. When I got to that first drainage, which was literally 100 feet away from where I was, you know, I got to my feet and was able to stand and somewhat walk, more of like a zombie walk. I started working my way down the drain, edge of the drainage on the trail, and part way down, I lost my footing, and I tumbled head over heels all the way down to the bottom, probably, you know, 250, 300 feet or more down into the drainage and rolling down through the boulders. And then I finally came to the bottom, stopped at the bottom. There's a creek there. You know, I remember listening to the creek, and I was in so much pain, and I was all tangled up in the gunsling and just laying in the boulders and, like I said, insurmountable amount of pain. I just gave up. I just laying there going, yeah, this is it. This is as far as I'm going to make it. There's no way I'm getting out of here. And just in so much pain. I pulled up my phone and wanted to go play some music for just help me relax and just let things happen. And I mean, there's so many things going through your head at that moment, right?
Yeah.
And pull my phone and end up playing the last song that I played the night before for my daughter while putting her to bed. And the song was Baby Shark, and it happened to be on repeat.
It's probably one of my favorite details that I found when learning about you. I was like, you know, that is not only brilliant, but a good motivator, because I would do just about anything to end that song.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because it was on repeat or... You know, I wanted to see my wife and kids again. That, you know, made me, you know, start to try to crawl out of there. And, you know, I thought I left my phone there in the rocks, and I kept trying to crawl away from the music, but, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Just from there on out, it was a Baby Shark for the next, oh, God, probably 4 or 5 hours. I just set little mini goals kind of the whole way up that hillside. Just, you know, what did most of it was a belly crawl up. And when I started, it was just, okay, I'm going to reach for that rock and pull myself to that rock. And I got to that rock and I was sitting there thinking, you know, I got enough energy. I could probably make it to the next rock. And I pulled myself to that one. And then it was like, oh, there's a bush. Let's see if I can make it to that bush. And then let's get to that stump. And then I managed to get to the top of the drainage back to the trail. And I was like, can I crawl over to that tree over there and pull myself up? And all the whole time, I was only looking 3 to 4 feet in front of me, just something I could reach. And once it got going, it became easier. You know, I'm setting all these little mini goals and I'm achieving them. And you get that sense of hope. And I was like, okay, well, I can make it to the next tree. And it's 10 feet away this time. So you just stumble to that one. And you know, much to my surprise, I made it out to an outfitter's camp, which was a little more than halfway out. And I got pretty excited getting to that camp because there's always somebody in there, and I've never seen the camp empty before. And so I get over to the camp. You have an electric fence that's stretched around the place, and this to keep the bears out. And so I opened up the fence and walked in and got to the first tent, opened it up. Nobody there. I walked over to the second tent, opened it up. Nobody there. And I was like, well, this sucks. The camp was pretty empty. There wasn't even horses in the pen or anything. And so I got back to the first tent and I was just like, well, this, you know, just extremely exhausted. I, you know, figured I'll look for a phone or sat phone or radio. Because every time when they're there, they always had one there in case of emergency. So I was looking through the tent. They had a 2-foot by 4-foot white plywood cabinet sitting on a table in there, and it had this real fancy gate lock where you like turn it and fold this thing open. Well, I mean, when your fingers don't work and you can't really see, it's pretty hard to operate this, you know.
You can imagine that would pose a difficulty, yeah.
Yeah, and then also you listen to Baby Shark, so it's frustrating enough, you know, so you're trying to. So I managed to. So I just figured, like, the heck with the lock. I just grabbed the corner of the cabinet and knocked on the floor, hoping it would break open. Well, it did. It opened up, and all these cans of soup can or canned food started rolling around the floor, and I was, you know, feeling through them, and I found this thing about like a leather pouch, about the size of the old mic phones, the old flip mic phones you can do a radio or call on.
Yeah.
Like the old Motorola Razors, you know, that's what it kind of looked like. And it was so exciting. Again, I'm trying to open it up, and I open it up, and it's this jumbo Leatherman players thing, and I was so disappointed.
You're giving Evel Knievel a run for his money with just the...
Like, it's just like, oh, I just totally devastated. Like this sucks, right? And then, you know, I'm starving. I'm exhausted. Amongst the cans, there's these... there's a triangle-shaped can, and when you see it, you know exactly what it is. It's like the can of Spam, you know, that.
Oh.
Yeah, ham. But you need... it's like a traditional can. You got to break off that little T-tab, put it in the corner of the can, and you roll it up. Well, I mean, that doesn't work when your fingers don't work. So I'm just like, got this can, and I'm so hungry, and I had some rocks, and they used the other cans and started bashing on it, trying to crack it open. And I finally got it open, and I remember I just grabbed my fingers full, and I stuck it on the left side of my mouth, kind of in the back of my mouth, on my tongue to kind of let it dissolve, because at this point my jaw was actually all the skin off the left side of my face was removed, and my jaw was hanging down, just kind of flopping in the wind.
Oh my
and,
God.
And I could feed myself through the side, and put it on like the back of my tongue and just let it slowly dissolve and fall in my throat. And I remember just eating this ham, and it was tasting so good. Like, it was yummy. Mm. I mean,
it probably the only like, time you'd say that about Spam, I'm sure.
I mean, it could have been like expired 10-year-old Spam, but man, it was good at the time.
Didn't matter at that moment.
Nope. And so I get through all the cans, they had a picnic table set up in there. So I'm sitting at the picnic table, and I'm trying to eat my ham, and just there's blood dripping down on the table and everywhere. And it was kind of, you'd drip and you'd wipe it up and it just keep dripping. And that was very distracting, kind of drove me nuts. So they had some Bounty sheets and toilet paper on the table. So I grabbed them and started wrapping my face, just trying to stop the bleeding, just because it was driving me nuts, dripping on the table. And I grabbed my jaw and I was holding it over, trying to fold part of my skin up to wrap my face up, and my jaw like clicked, and I kind of move it again, and it seemed like it relieved all this pressure in my face. Oh, must have been dislocated or just offset. Anyways, it went back in, and now I can kind of make noise and talk a little bit. And I continued to wrap my face with Bounty sheets and toilet paper until the bleeding kind of stopped. And then I found a roll of, where on the table, there was a roll of vet wrap. It's kind of like athletic tape, but for horses. And so they had a roll of that, and I just grabbed that and started wrapping my face in that just to hold all the paper towel in place. And then go back to eating my ham, and then, you know, my hands are bleeding, and I had a couple big holes in them, so I decided to tape up my hands, cover up the holes, and I taped up my leg because it was bleeding quite a bit. And I remember when I played football, how the sports med team would tape up my knee for playing, and so I kind of just did a Y around my knee and taped it up just to help see if that would help me to stand. And you know, I was just extremely exhausted, and I just remember sitting there eating Spam, listening to Baby Shark, and I was just, it kind of gave up there, and I was gonna stay there and hopefully wait for the outfitters to come, and they'll be able to haul me out, or they'll find me laying there dead, and at least this way here someone would find me right away.
Right.
But, you know, I was sitting there debating what to do, and I decided to write a note. They had all these little square pieces of paper on the table and some Sharpies, so I grabbed one of them, and I wrote a little note to the outfitter, let him know, I'm sorry for making a mess, and let him know who I was. And the backside was more for my wife, to let her know that, to tell her that I loved her and that I tried to get out. And my whole plan was just to make a little fire in there in the tent, and I laid out a sleeping bag, and I was going to I was just going to lay there and fall asleep and, you know, and so I grabbed my gun and I had three rounds left, walked out the tent, fired my last three shots I had just as like an SOS. And when I walked back in the tent, I put the note on the table and for some reason I just couldn't lay down. I just put my gun there and said, fuck it, you know, let's just walk down the trail and maybe they'll be down the trail. So I started, you know, head towards where the truck was and, you know, and I didn't see anybody. And a couple times I thought I did, and you can't see very far. And when you're that exhausted and beat up, you kind of start to hallucinate a little bit, I think. And I still wasn't thinking, I still didn't think I was going to make it. I got to the last, I guess, kilometer or 2 kilometers of the trail. There's quite the hill or ridge you got to climb up and over. And I remember being at the base of it thinking, do I stick to the creek and follow the creek down? This is where the trail crosses a creek, and the creek kind of parallels the road for a little ways, and there's a bridge. I was thinking, well, I can walk down the creek. It's probably flatter. I don't have to go over the hill. But then, you know, it's a little bit further to the bridge, and I walk up the bridge and then walk down the road towards my truck. And I was just thinking if I, you know, passed out or died along the way, no one would find me in this creek. I better stick to the trail. So I stuck to the trail, and it starts to go up the hill, and, you know, I can't see very far, and I was just basically focusing on my feet. I would just take a little step forward, shuffle my feet, and made my way up the hill. I got about, you know, almost to the top of the hill. There's these two boulders, a little bit bigger than a shoebox, that sit on the trail, and they're right in the middle of the trail, and I hated these rocks. I mean, every year that every time I ride my bike and I bump into these rocks and almost fall off my bicycle, and I just for the last 17 years I've been too lazy to move them off the trail. I just remember looking at the ground and seeing these two rocks and never been so happy to see these rocks before, and I was like, ooh, and I just I remember just, you know, tapping them, giving them a little kiss, and from there I knew I was going to make it out, and yeah. The rest is really history from there.
That's incredible. Honestly, what is most amazing to me is that you had the response time to immediately begin thinking of what to do. I don't think I would have been in that. I don't know what I probably would have froze. I'm one of those, you know, people either, what do they, flee or fight, whatever that is. I would just freeze, I think. But have you always kind of had that personality where you're like, just immediate reaction?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I was able to stay, like, I'm been pretty well able to stay calm during stressful situations like this. So, I mean, everything just seemed like it was happening in slow motion. Like from when I looked over my right shoulder and seeing the bear to like stepping out of the way, it felt like it was like an hour. Like everything was just so slow. It's kind of like being on that movie Wanted, where, you know, Angelina Jolie and that dude are like shooting and how everything time slows down. Yeah, and that's what it kind of just felt like, because everything just really just slowed right down. Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird feeling.
Yeah, that is really incredible. And then I know that there's a cause to you that's really important. I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that, because I want to help you with this cause. I think it's great.
Yeah, so one of the things that I learned from doing these podcasts is a lot of people have reached out to me and reached out about PTSD and just how was I able to get back on my feet right away and the treatments. So that kind of started, get me started going on motivational speaking and to motivational speaking to companies and just, you know, corporations and just people, regular people in general, just to share what happened to me and the lessons I learned on that day. And also it's turned into now more of a passion for me to raise money for PTSD, for researching the different types of recovery methods. And once you're in there getting treatment, how do you navigate the treatments and how do you know which ones you should go in? So now I'm starting up, I'm raising money for a chair position at the University of Calgary in Alberta, where that I'm trying to raise $5 million, and what that money does is it goes into an account, it gets vested, and the interest off of that money is what runs the research and the research for PTSD, for recovery and treatment methods, and for how to navigate the system. And I just feel that that's probably the, well, I feel that's the best way for me. That way they're able to help out not just hundreds, but thousands, and be able to help out people for, well, longer than you and I would be around.
Absolutely. No, that's got an impact far longer than our lifetimes. Where can we go to donate to this cause?
So it'll be on the grizzlydude.ca. There'll be a link on there where you can go directly donate to this fund. And you can get a tax receipt. It's all charitable status and everything. So you can donate a dollar. You can donate, you know, yeah, a dollar up to $5 million all in one shot if you want to give that a go. And this will be on grizzlydude.ca. And also check on my webpage there. If you can get a signed copy of the book Mauled, and I mail worldwide. Also, too, on there, there's some merch and some of the proceeds from the merch. I'm going to say a large chunk of the proceeds for the merch goes to this chair position, because, like I said, I want to achieve that $5 million goal and have something there forever that can help millions of people over its lifetime. So
we can get something awesome off your site and still help them support your cause.
Yep. Yes, you can.
And you say those books are signed?
Every single one of them signed. I personally signed them.
I'm going to need one of those. Yeah, go on your website later and get me one. So if you see my order pop in.
Definitely. I usually ship out within the same day or the next day. Depending on where you live, they're... I have a copy on. Well, depending on where you live, it usually takes about 5 to 6 days to get. And then you get a fancy bookmark too. I get all these little Grizzly Dude bookmarks. So they're, you get all kinds of funky sayings on there, like not all bears are friendly. Don't poke the bear. You could bear it even when you think you can't.
I love that you have a sense of humor about it. That's like another huge thing. That's just awesome.
Yeah. You just can't let something like this, stop you from doing what you love to do. Like that's one of the other lessons, you know. It was a tragic day and probably one of the longest days I've ever had, but I learned so much from it, and it just made me, you know, a better person and you know, be thankful what I have. And yeah,
that's a really great lesson to take home. And I, like I said, ever since I learned of your story, I've been like every moment being like, you know, just be thankful and take stock of things, because in an instant something like that can happen. And the fact that you were strong enough to overcome that, I don't know if we would all be that lucky. I don't know, I want to say lucky, because it really was your sheer determination and not luck at all. But if you had a word of advice to say to anybody who's going out there into the backcountry to hunt and stuff, what would you say in terms of bear safety?
Well, I'd say make sure you don't pull me, and make sure you have your bear spray where it's readily accessible and not at the bottom of your backpack. Now I keep mine on my chest, ready to go. And, you know, in my opinion, bear spray is way more effective than a gun. With a gun, you know, you have to hit the bear in the head. You have to stop, because I mean, you can just hit the bear, but he's still coming when they're charging, and they're fast. At least with bear spray, you just spray and it, and they run into it, and it stops them dead. Like, to stop a charging bear, from what research I've done, and I mean, I've sprayed a bear or a grizzly bear since, is the you have to take out, you know, two or more of its vital senses in order to stop a bear, put it in panic mode, so stop a charge. You know, take out its respiratory system, breathing, the burning of the nose and eyes. That just puts them in full panic mode, and that's what bear spray does, is it just burns the eyes and nose. When they take a breath, it burns their lungs. It just put them in complete panic mode, and then you have a better chance of, you know, not going through the
Well, that's invaluable advice. I really appreciate that, and I hope everybody takes that to heart. And you're corroborating what I've said this whole time. I've not had the experience you have, but I've always been a bear spray over a gun type of person myself too, just because of, you know, injury statistics. But it was so awesome to have you be able to tell that story in your perspective. And you're such an incredible person. And again, I know you get it a lot, so I don't want to go on and on, but just amazing and such a lesson that you've taught me and hopefully all of our listeners. So I really appreciate you taking the time out to tell us that.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me. This was fun.
Thank you so much. It was fun. Thank you. You're awesome. Anything you ever need, let us know. And I'm going to send everybody we know to help you out with that cause, because that's an outstanding cause.
Awesome. I appreciate it. And that's grizzlydude.ca.
Awesome. Grizzlydude.ca. All right. Well, thank you so much again. And I'll let you get to your evening, but enjoy yourself. Thank you again.
All right. Have a great evening. And just remember that you can bear it even when you think you can't.
Thank you, Jeremy. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye. Bye.